This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by the Knoxville Hospital and Clinics, the Pleasantville Clinic and E.J. McKeever Clinic, Knoxville Chamber of Commerce, Marion County Auto Body, Knoxville Raceway, and the Marion County Fair Association. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you would like to suggest a topic for in-depth, send an email to bobleonard@kniakrls.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Capstone Behavioral Health, Don's Heating and Cooling, Pierschbacher Funeral Home, Hewitt Service Center in Monroe, Anytime Fitness, and McCall Monument. Enjoy the program.
Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, our first responders work to keep us safe. Where we run from danger, they run towards it. How many first responders are there in the county? How are they organized? What training occurs, and what challenges do they face? In the first part of a 10-part in-depth program, let's go in-depth with Jeff Anderson, Marion County Emergency Management Coordinator. So, Jeff, can you give me an overview and our listeners an overview of emergency response in the county?
Yeah, Bob. As far as fire departments and EMS agencies go, we've got 10 fire departments and counting Pella Ambulance. You know, we'd have a total of 11 fire and EMS departments. With respect to law enforcement, we've got four municipal police departments. Of course, we've got the Marion County Sheriff's Office, and included in there would be the Marion County Conservation Department, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the Iowa State Patrol, and the Army Corps of Engineers.
Okay, let's start with the fire departments then. We've got, and I'm just going to do which ones come to mind immediately, and you correct me if I miss somebody or something wrong. We've got Columbia down in the southwest part. We've got Melcher Dallas down there as well. We've got Indiana Township. We've got Bussey. We have Knoxville Rural, Knoxville, Clay, Harvey, Pella, Pleasantville. Who am I forgetting?
You got them all. Counting Pella Ambulance, you got them all. Everybody's accounted for.
All right, so those are our fire and rescues. And then police forces, we've got Pleasantville, Melcher Dallas has an officer, we've got Knoxville, and we have Pella, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and then we have conservation officers. Who else do we have?
The Marion County Sheriff's Office, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Iowa State Patrol.
Okay, so that's a big, long list of first responders.
Yep.
Can you give me a ballpark guess how many folks are involved in all of this?
Well, I would say we've got to be probably pushing 250 to 300 people, I suppose, all told across the county.
250 to 300 people, and everybody from people that are in salaried positions and to volunteers.
Yeah, ranging all the way from... You know, some of the police departments and even some of the fire departments have administrator-type personnel on staff, and all the way through the rank and file to the strictly volunteer members.
And at the center of all this is communications with the Marion County Sheriff's Office Dispatch and Pella Dispatch.
That's correct.
Those are two dispatch offices.
Those folks are kind of the glue that hold it all together and make everything else possible.
And they send 250, 300 people where they need to go.
Yep. Yeah. You think about just the intricacies of trying to explain to one person over a phone or radio what you're trying to get them to do. Imagine doing it on a daily basis with, it's not uncommon for us to have several police officers and a couple ambulances and a couple fire trucks out at the same time. Imagine the intricacies of trying to get all those people where they need to be and keep all that stuff straight.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by Hubes Garage, Vermeer Corporation, Iowa State Savings Bank, Pella Roll Screen Foundation, Dan's Plumbing and Heating in Knoxville, and the Knoxville Police Department and Knoxville Fire and Rescue. Join us for In-Depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you miss In-Depth, you can hear this week's programs in their entirety at KNIAKRLS.com in the Radio Audio Media Player and catch up on in-depth programs that you may have missed. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Pleasantville Schools, Knoxville Regional Livestock Market, Marion County Public Health Department, Morris Roofing, Norm Rosendahl Tiling and Septic, and the Knoxville Area Anesthesia Services with Steve Eck.
I continued my conversation with Jeff Anderson, Marion County Emergency Management Coordinator. Emergency management, what's your role in all of this?
My primary role is to, when those folks identify or have the need for resources that are outside their normal course of business or outside their normal relationships, such as the National Guard, state or federal resources, that's where I get involved to try and bridge the gap between what they have and what they need.
Well, and I've seen you in meetings with the appropriate first responders and the Guard. I mean, when the flood came in, what was that, 2008, the Guard was here.
Yep. We have always had a strong presence of the Iowa State Patrol, and in 2008 that was critical. The Guard was here in 2008 helping identify key infrastructure that might be impacted due to what we were expecting for floodwaters.
When I sat in on part of that meeting, it was pretty interesting. They were just real matter-of-fact looking out for things that could go wrong and things they needed to watch out for.
It's kind of funny. In hindsight now, they actually knew more about some of our key infrastructure than what I did. Now, I hadn't been here very long, and so it was kind of a learning event for me, too.
And that's happened just once, or has the Guard been in more than once?
The Guard has been here in that capacity once, but we've had you've covered the events. We've had the 71st Civil Support Team mm-hmm. here on numerous occasions for training and exercises. So,
and that's been pretty interesting. I mean, you guys all work together to simulate disasters, and they're real disasters. I mean, one was at the racetrack, one was in Pleasantville by a chemical plant, where you guys were training for
the worst. Those relationships that have been built over the years in, let's just say, mock or drills, those relationships are absolutely key in what we do, and they're key in our ability to deal with an event that is bigger than the normal events that we have.
Well, and one of the things that people forget is occasionally we will see an ambulance go by, occasionally we'll see a fire truck go by, and everybody wonders, what's happening. But for the people involved, there are, what, thousands of these incidents a year? Thousands.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know exactly what our total calls for service are for the year, but, some of the fire departments, they'll average 100 fire calls per year. I know that Knoxville Fire and Pella Ambulance will both do in excess of 1,000 calls for, EMS or ambulance calls in a calendar year. So there's several thousand calls that go on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
And so we're averaging, some of those departments are averaging over, three or more calls a day.
Yeah. In fact, when I was in Pleasantville, 3 or 4 years ago, we averaged just about a call per day. There was the call totals for the years usually were somewhere in that 370 calls for the year. And, when you pencil that out, it averages once a day. As well as I know that they don't always fall that way. You may go a week without a call and then have 3 days in a row with multiple calls. So that's really where the resources get stretched thin. When you start looking at the sheer number of these volunteers or these staffers that are volunteer, that's where things get really stretched.
Well, I remember a few years ago, one dry spring, the Knoxville Rural Township Fire Department went out on, I think, 9 different grass fires.
Yeah,
one day.
In a single day. I believe it was a Saturday. Yeah. Very, very busy. a little bit uncharacteristic, but you know, it just goes to show how quickly things can escalate, you know, when they do kind of start going bad.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by Pleasantville State Bank, Griffin Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, Raymaker Screen Printing, Two Rivers Cooperative, Verduft Agency, Central Cellular, and the Pella Walmart. Join us for in-depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you would like to suggest a topic for in-depth, send an email to bobleonard@kniakrls.com. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Dave's Pro Auto, Kooning Plumbing and Heating, Boats Home Furnishings, Dowie Pest Control, Van Haften Racing and Otley, and Pella Lock and Key. Enjoy the program.
I continued my conversation with Jeff Anderson, Marion County Emergency Management Coordinator.
And we've had big buildings catch on fire. The Pallet Fire in Pella, yep, a few years ago, Skunk River Pallet Fire. We've had fires in downtown Knoxville. We've had whole buildings go down. There's, you know, fires regularly. I don't know how often there's a fire, but it seems that there's one every few weeks. Anyway.
Yep, it
Knock
sure does.
Wood.
Yeah.
And then emergency calls, everything from, you know, somebody being sick to going to the hospital, you know, tragic car wrecks, people, you know, just getting in a jam.
Yep, and it just seems to, you know, if you listen to the radio as you do, you know how it can be quiet for a while, and in the emergency responder community, they don't like to use the Q. They call it the Q word. Nobody likes to talk about the call status when things kind of go quiet, because that's usually a preemption for things to get crazy, and so that's kind of the unsaid word.
So we don't say that.
We don't talk about the Q word.
Yeah, y'all don't say the Q word, and it's not good for me to bring it up either when I say, oh, I haven't seen you.
No, we will typically look at you, we'll kind of give you that look like, let's not go there, you know. But that's just, you know, kind of our way of dealing with the circumstances.
Well, and the thing is, you have to approach pretty much everything like it's really bad situation that, or can go bad very quickly. You have to really get your game, you have to build your game, get your head together to respond appropriately.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, any family members out there, or any families out there that have family members that are in the emergency response world know, you know, they can talk better than I can about the minute that tone goes off for that call. You know, the mannerisms, the attitude, you know, the game face comes on, and, you know, it's pretty immediate. You know, those folks are trained to deal with those circumstances, and they use every split second that they have available to them to get prepared for what it is they're being called to help with.
And it happens during dinner. It happens,
yeah,
during the Super Bowl. It happens in a wedding, potentially. I mean, it can happen any time when they've got to go.
Yeah. You know, a few years back, we had a big fire in Melcher, Dallas on Christmas Eve, you know. And I know there was folks that responded to the fire and spent a significant part of the day dealing with that fire that were missing out or had been in the middle of Christmas festivities. So that part kind of gets overlooked at times, the amount of family dinners or children's birthdays or, you know, things such as that sometimes get missed. And I just always like to give a shout out and a little recognition for all that these folks do.
Well, and now that you mention it, there was a fire, an arson on Christmas morning. I guess it was a year ago.
A year ago. Absolutely correct. You know, Christmas morning, mm-hmm, bright and early, and you know,
I don't think it was even bright, was it?
Yeah, you know, I don't think it was. It was pretty dark. You know, yeah, that's a very good example.
More in depth after this.
This special edition in-depth program on our first responders is brought to you in part by Laley USA, Dr. Kurt Vanderplu, Precision Pulley and Idler, McGriff's of New Sharon, Golf Cars of Iowa, Enfeld Meat Market, Pella Engraving, Pella Regional Health Center, Van Haften Plumbing and Heating, and U.S. Bank. Join us for In-Depth every weekday as Dr. Bob Leonard goes in-depth on the local topics that you care about, following our hour-long news magazines at 8 a.m., 1 p.m., and 6 p.m. If you miss In-Depth, you can hear this week's programs in their entirety at KNIAKRLS.com in the radio audio media player and catch up on In-Depth programs that you may have missed. Once again, thanks to our sponsors, Windmill Mall Antiques, Vandenberg's, Central Cellular in Pella, Knoxville, and Sully, Franklin Street Clothing, Meniga Pest Control, Cabinet Design of Pella, West End Auto, and Community First Credit Union.
I continued my conversation with Jeff Anderson, Marion County Emergency Management Coordinator.
Let's talk training. What kinds of training does it take for our firefighters, our police officers, all to be our conservation officers, our DNR officers, for all of them to get ready?
What's required? I'm certainly not the expert, but what I can tell you is it's never ending. These folks are in training a lot. You know, when a fire department has 20 firefighters that need, you know, roughly 20 to 24 hours a year, the training is constantly ongoing. The police officers, I know that they're frequently going to the academy for training updates. And the EMS folks, good grief, I can't even begin to try and keep track of how many hours that they need to have to maintain their medical certifications.
So it just goes on. It's never ending.
Yeah, it's a ongoing, the training bus really never stops, so to speak.
Well, and do things change over the years? Is it just sort of reinforcing what we already know? Are there new techniques, new equipment?
Both. All of that. Very little of the training that I've been involved in is static. You know, the educators of the world, so to speak, have gotten really good at identifying trends. So we can talk about things that are actually happening, you know, maybe in a geographic area. I know the law enforcement folks are constantly getting updated on the trends and maybe changes that have been brought about because of changes to the laws. You know, so they have to kind of change how they go about things. Fires, you know, the manner in which we build buildings and the materials that we build buildings out of has changed, you know, in the time that I've been in the fire service, and that all affects the way that the buildings behave when they're on fire. So yeah, it can be complex, but it's definitely ongoing. And then as far as the medical folks, the medical community is constantly striving to do better. The state has raised their standards for the local EMS agencies. So obviously, you know, our folks have had to step up their game and increase their training to new levels in order to comply with the standards. And just the technologies that are available, you know, I've seen things done by our medical professionals in the field and in the back of ambulances that 20 years ago we'd have never thought that you'd see it anywhere but in a hospital setting.
Now, when you talk about training, is it difficult to convince, say, legislators or folks in Des Moines that are used to, you know, all salaried departments to think about the fact that we're using volunteers for the majority of our first responders?
It's very difficult. However, the part of that, with me, it's never been I'm required to do some training because of a code. For me, it's what has driven me is the desire to do it as best that I can. One of my sayings that I use frequently is being a volunteer is not an excuse for mediocrity. I want to do the job as a volunteer with the same level as a professional firefighter. And I want to do it safely. That's the part that drives me is I want everybody to go home. I want everybody to train not so that they can comply just strictly with the laws and the codes and the standards, but I want everybody to train so that they can be the best that they can be and increase their chances of going home safely at the end of the call or at the end of their shift.
Well, and we had a little bit of a scare in Jefferson the other day when a couple of firefighters went home with some, as I understand it, when that restaurant burned, some minor injuries. That could happen here, too.
Yeah, very easily that could happen. And, you know, we try not to get complacent, you know, in doing the things that we do. But, you know, an example would be some of the parts that they're using on new automobiles these days. When those things are subject to a fire, I don't know what exactly they're called, but the little... A car used to have hood springs on it, which was nothing more than a wound spring that held the hood up. Now they're more or less a contained pressurized cylinder that kind of resembles a shock. And those things, when they're subject to a fire, they explode and basically shoot a projectile out just like a gun. Never thought we'd have to worry about getting hit by a projectile from an exploding car part 20 years ago, but now it's a fact of life.
Now, where does all of the money come from for all this equipment, for all of the fire trucks, all, you know, everything that you need, the gear? Where does all that money come from?
I would say 95% of that, Bob, is paid for, you know, through the property taxes that folks pay. There's always some grant monies available, but you know, in the economic environment that we're in now, we're starting to see the grant monies dry up a little bit. So mostly it's property tax money and, you know, your occasional fundraiser here and there.
The breakfast pancake feeds and stuff that we all go to.
Yep, exactly. You know, most of those folks that will identify a project that they are trying to raise money for, and, you know, they'll go open their fire hall or station to the residents of their community for a Saturday morning and flip pancakes and try and make a little extra money.
And so that might buy bunker gear or something, a piece of equipment.
Yep.
I think a sensor of some type.
Yep.
That bought in the past.
It might be a thermal imaging camera. You know, so that's the other thing is, you know, the costs, the upfront costs for some of this equipment has dramatically risen. I mean, in, you know, just a couple of years ago, in one calendar year, the cost of a new fire truck jumped $30,000 just because of new emission standards that came into play. So it's awful hard, you know, when the tax monies stay relatively static, it's awful hard for a fire department to absorb a $30,000 increase in one calendar year in as far as buying equipment.
So when we go to the pancake feeds, when we help with the fundraisers, when we make a donation, it really makes a difference?
My observation would be, yes, it does. Yeah, it's just so difficult for those folks to try and provide the levels of service that they want to provide to their residents with the budgets being what they are. So that little extra income, you know, on an annual basis, it really does make a difference.
Well, this might be a hard question to answer, but does the public in general give enough appreciation to our first responders? Do we let them know that we appreciate it enough, that we value what they do?
I think at times we do. I think at other times we probably are pretty lacking. You know, whenever there's a big event, you know, whether it be a big fire or a police chase or something like that, you know, the attention is increased, and I think as people hear about those news stories, they're thankful. It's when we're all at home sleeping in bed and the ambulances are out running around, or the police officers are out there, you know, in the cold and the dark trying to keep us all safe. I think that's when, you know, we need to be thankful and give thanks to those folks, because they're doing it on a daily basis, you know, while we're home sleeping.
Thanks to Jeff Anderson for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In-Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In-Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In-Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.